This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, second hour of The Edge here. We have plenty to get to. George Horry's going to join us in just a moment. Our usual Monday spots with George. We have plenty of news coming out of college football. Our preview, of course, of the World Series as we are approaching the end, and then our circled games of the week. Let's bring in George, though, host of PFF Forecast. Does a lot of great work for Pro Football Focus. So, George, as always, thank you for the time. We'll start with this. It was a question that Wes asked in the first hour. Do you consider us friends, George?
Of course.
Okay, there we go.
I see you every Monday.
There it is. All right, the politically correct answer.
People I actually see. Yeah.
Well, I would assume that you give us the honest answer for the rest of our analysis here. Let's start with Chicago and Los Angeles then, because I was making the case here. These are two teams that I am like angling to play against at some point, right? I don't think the Rams are that good for a 4-2 team. Don't think the Bears are that good for a 5-1 team. But if I am weighing which side it is that it is time to play against, I think it's the Rams laying 6 against one of the best defenses in the National Football League. Am I crazy about that?
No, in fact, this was the bet that we liked the most on the PFF forecast and willing to wait all the way until Monday for it to happen. Here's the way that I would look at it. The Rams have played a bottom 5 schedule in terms of one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. And they haven't beaten any of the good teams they've actually played. So when you look at the Bears, I mean, you know, it might have been a little fraudulent the way they beat the Bucs. I think the Bucs beat themselves a little bit, but they still did win that game. And as you mentioned, their defense, I think, is probably second only to Tampa Bay in terms of completeness. They have really good coverage unit. They have Khalil Mack plays. Obviously, they have very good unit up front, and they have some linebackers to make some plays. So if you're looking at where the Rams might struggle, this would be a team against which I would think they would struggle. And they have in the past. Jared Goff has not performed well against the Bears defense in the past. 6 points is just too many. If you just look at our power ranking and equate that to a point spread, it'd be about 1.3 points. There's no fans in this stadium tonight. So I am with you 100%. 6 points is just way too many.
George, a game that I'm kind of struggling to decide what I want to do with, if anything. First game on the Sunday rotation is the Colts and the Lions. And Colts off a bye week. Detroit has won now 2 in a row on the road. 2.5, 3 now pretty much showing in the market. And I just saw, just was kind of looking at the Colts schedule in November. 4-5-1 teams in consecutive weeks in the month of November. So they let one get away in Jacksonville. So on the surface, this is one that they got to have. But all of a sudden, Detroit's got a little life.
They do. I mean, since Kenny Golladay came back, they are the most efficient passing offense using expected points added per play. I had to look that up again because I thought I'd done something wrong. But Kenny Golladay, Marvin Jones, and Matt Stafford, they throw the ball down the field and they do it well. And that game yesterday, Todd Gurley gave them a real chance. But then again, they did march down the field and capitalize. I think that's the kind of thing that they can do when they're hitting on all cylinders. It's tough to go against Frank Reich coming off bye. That's the thing that gives me pause here. It's also the Lions. You know, just when you think the Lions have figured it out, they're probably going to prove you wrong. I would say this, though. If it gets to 3, I think if I'm going to make a play on this game, it would be the Lions. And then I will make sure I don't watch a single second of the game, right, so as not to ruin my Sunday.
It'll stress you out like it did for Lions backers yesterday in Atlanta, for yes. Sure.
So ridiculous. So, George, where are we at, or at least where are you at with, you know, you and I, we had talked about this a couple of weeks ago. We brought it up a few times now. Slowly but surely, the Colts are falling down the defensive ratings, right? DVOA's got them, I think, 3rd or 4th now. What is this defense at this point right now? Because you mentioned the offensive numbers that we've seen from this passing attack from the Lions. Like, I feel like this is a defense they could take advantage of.
I just don't. I refuse to put any stock in average defenses playing well because they've played poor competition. Right. And that's what the Colts are. I mean, they're not a bad defense. They're not, they're not the Dallas Cowboys out here making the Washington football team look like, you know, division winners, but they're not a uniquely skilled defense in that they're going to shut you down in one area or another, or in my mind, a complete defense where they just have guys at every level that are going to kind of cramp your style, so to speak. And I don't think the Lions style is going to be mitigated by what the Colts do defensively. So there I look at the offense and I say, is this offense doing well? And if it is, then I'm undeterred by an average defense, in this case, the Colts.
All right. So you brought up the Cowboys. Their defense is clearly terrible. Like, the team is just, I was really surprised. So I tried to buy low yesterday on the Cowboys, got burned by that. They were never in that game. So we saw some lines up posted. Eagles minus 7.5 in some spots against the Cowboys. Obviously, we don't know if it's going to be DiNucci or Dalton. I've made the case that whoever it is, right, I don't think we're going to see much of an adjustment in terms of the line. But I just see this Eagles team. I've seen them play now, George, like 7.5 against anybody for the Eagles seems really rich if that's the number.
It sure does, doesn't it? Here's the issue I have. We saw Andy Dalton on Monday night. This game still is on Sunday night because there's going to be no flexing out of Cowboys Eagles. We know that rating is going to be stellar. So even despite how bad these teams are, I'll say this. If Andy Dalton is playing, he is the better quarterback, but you're going to have to tie me to a post to get me to bet on the Cowboys. That being said, I'm not advocating the other side of this necessarily because you're dead on. The Eagles have found a way to keep both teams involved. Like Carson Wentz had a really nice statistical game last week, but on Thursday, but you could kind of get the sense like there's just no way that they're ever going to close the door, and winning by 7+ kind of means closing the door.
George, a couple situations here where we've got two teams that their O went in the loss column, that being Tennessee suffered their first loss, as did the Seattle Seahawks last night. I'll start with Tennessee and Cincinnati. Line now up to 6 in some spots. Off that home loss to Pittsburgh where they rallied, but it came up short late as Gostkowski missed the field goal to send it into overtime. But open 4, now we're seeing 6 in the market at Cincinnati. I know part of that move is predicated on Joe Mixon's status going forward, but this seems like a little bit of an overreaction. I would almost be leaning more to the Bengals side, even though they had their own heartbreaking loss this week. Tennessee, might there be a hangover from losing that game against Pittsburgh, and now bettors not afraid to lay it with them on the road here in Cincinnati?
This is the reason that I immediately flip the script, and we do this on our podcast every Sunday night, to look ahead to next week, because you can get some nice numbers if you just immediately take a look. And this was 4.5. And at 4, I think this is a nice spot for the Titans. I also think the over here, I think it was 55.5, maybe down to 54.5 now. Neither of these teams are stopping anybody. The Bengals clearly can move the football. So I like that as well. 6, 5.5, 6, I think is a little rich for me. I would move to the over there. The Bengals are always a spunky, you know, backdoor cover. Well, against the Browns, I mean, they were more than that. They had a real chance to win the game. But the Titans defense doesn't worry me at all. And so I think that's where the Bengals can make some headway here and why I like the over. The Titans to me are a weird team to figure out because they played so poorly against the Steelers in that first half when you'd expect them to come out kind of guns blazing. They didn't. And then Ryan Tannehill kind of got them back in the game in the second half. I would expect them to come out with a little more fire in this one in a game they have to win, right? Just to me, the over is the play here.
And let me follow up with that, George. The other team that lost their first game was the Seattle Seahawks. And this is kind of a little bit more of a macro question in addition to a matchup question. How are you guys at Pro Football Focus kind of evaluating home field advantage? Because when you look at this 49ers Seahawks game, you're now seeing flat 3 on Seattle. San Francisco took the early money today. And we know, I think all of us would price Seattle as one of the better home field advantages in the league historically. And they would be higher than the boilerplate average 3 points for home field advantage that's kind of thrown out there as a general rule. But now you're seeing Seattle only laying 3 at home. How much are you deducting from home field advantage going forward? And also your thoughts on the matchup here. Are the 49ers back off that Super Bowl hangover? And was last night just a blip for Seattle?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. So what we do is we have a couple of different models that use a different set of variables to come up with a spread. And then we kind of use all of those together, pull them together and come up with one number and do a few other things, wave a magic wand, sprinkle some fairy dust, that whole deal, pray a few times, you know. And the spot is a very important one. And so what we've seen this year is that home field, you know, the 2.5-ish points is down more to 1, you know, or even a little fewer, a little less than that. And the spot can dictate a little bit more. So this spot, you know, it's not like the Niners are traveling across the country or to a different time zone or anything like that. So I'm not as worried about the spot here for the Niners. And I think when you look at these two teams, here's what this was going around Twitter last night, right? Which is the Seahawks don't play a normal game. And one of the reasons they don't play a normal game is that their defense is absolutely terrible. And if you think Kyle Shanahan can go scheme up Bill Belichick's defense, I mean, what is he going to do to this Seattle defense? Jimmy G, over the last 2 weeks, has an average depth of target just over 5 yards downfield. That's the shortest in the NFL. However, they have the best yards per attempt. And the reason for that is that they're getting yards after the catch at a ridiculous clip because Kyle Shanahan is an absolute wizard. And so that makes it really hard to see the Seahawks winning this game kind of outright. And the second reason for that is that Russell Wilson, as great as he's been, you saw some of his flaws last night. He holds onto the ball for a while. It's not as if the Cardinals have a good pass rush or really a good defense to begin with. The Niners have really put things back together from a coverage and up front. Fred Warner's been amazing. And so, you know, Russell Wilson's going to take some sacks. He's not Mahomes in that sense where he just finds a way to avoid ever taking a negative play. And I think that keeps both teams in it. And if you're going to tell me that Kyle Shanahan isn't going to figure out a way to put up points against the Seahawks, don't even start. So that's why I think this number is 3. I think if it gets to 3.5, the Niners are an auto bet here.
So let's spin this a little bit forward too, because I was thinking about this morning, George. How bad is this Seahawks defense when Cam Newton and the New England Patriots looked like world beaters that night when they played them up in Seattle, and now how bad this offense has looked up to this point? And so I'm curious because, you know, I keep making this joke, but I think I am ready to get hurt one more time here, because now they get Buffalo, New England, and as bad as that offense has looked, I still have a little faith in the way they can scheme up this defense. And Josh Allen and the Bills, some of these numbers over the last 3 weeks have not looked good. What's your read here on this matchup between the Patriots and the Bills?
I think I'm with you. I'm a glutton for punishment here. And this is what I found really weird about this game. And there's one reason why I might lay off. The reason is that Julian Edelman apparently is dinged up. And Julian Edelman was the only guy that could get any kind of separation. And we saw that in the Seattle game. I mean, he could have won the game if he held onto that pass at the end on the final drive. Drops have always been an issue for him, but at least he was getting open. It now appears that he is not getting open at all. And so the Patriots passing game is basically zero. And the only other part of the Patriots offense, and the reason Cam Newton is worth so much to them, would be that he has that designed run attempt ability. But they only had one design rush for Cam in their first 3 drives yesterday, which left me really scratching my head. And so I don't know if there's something going on there, you know, and that's what gives me pause. I'm not sure everything is right with Newton and that offense. I have no idea if it's something COVID related or whatnot. We know he's been susceptible, you know, he's been injured so many times before, but if I knew they were going to leverage Cam in the run game, I am with you. I think 4 is a little bit too rich for me here, and I would go back to the well. And again, I would just prepare myself for the pain.
What are you, is it as simple with the Buffalo Bills offense that it just goes as Josh Allen goes? Like the last 2 games for him, actually we can call it last 3 games, haven't been great. The first 4, he was absolutely fantastic. Is it as simple as if Allen's going to play well, the Bills offense is going to operate at a high level? Because these last 3 weeks, we're talking about from 35 points per game, essentially, to 17 points per game. They were awful on 3rd down yesterday against the Jets. It seems to be all Allen. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're right. And you're right about that with every team. If the quarterback plays well, they're going to be good. And there were some reasons to think regression was coming for Josh Allen. You mentioned 3rd down. 3rd down is something that from week to week, you shouldn't use to predict the next week. It's unstable. Another area that's unstable is red zone performance. They were atrocious in the red zone yesterday. You know, I actually thought Josh Allen played decently in that game yesterday. It wasn't great. Like it wasn't really good by any stretch, but it wasn't the catastrophe that we're used to seeing with Josh Allen in the years past, where it's been like, oh, he has a bad game and it's just fumbles and terrible throws left and right. But what he did in those first 4 was he threw so accurately down the football field and on 3rd down and in the red zone that you should expect some regression here. So I think that we just got a little excited with what we saw at the start. Josh Allen is probably more a 10 to 15 guy going forward than he was a 1 to 5 guy that we saw those first 4 weeks.
So what's your read on Buffalo? Because now we're talking about a 5-2 team with a negative point differential, like usually an indication, right, of future success here. 5-2 with a negative 4-point differential seems a little fraudulent, but they did have 2 blowouts. So what's the read on the team?
Could you make the case that actually barely beating the Jets is worse than getting blown out by Kyle Shanahan and the Niners?
Yes.
I think you legitimately could. And that is worrisome. I mean, they could have easily lost that game. And this is another situation where we're seeing them in the bright lights again. You know, when they played Kansas City, it was clear they were not ready for that. This is another situation. Until I see them do it, I'm not willing to trust them. I'm certainly not going to let, I'm not going to lay points with them against Bill Belichick, who has a history of being brilliant. One game is not going to deter me from that, especially against the Niners offense that was operating at that level. The Bills offense, it's not operating at that same level. It is more dependent on their quarterback making throws in situations that can be unpredictable. And so for that reason, I think at four, yeah, I'd probably roll with the Patriots.
George Torrey again, PFF Forecast, great podcast. Listen to it every single week. I find all the work up at PFF as well. George, as always, thank you very much, man.
Thank you, guys.
Yep, you got it. Again, George Torrey, friend of the show, as we found out. Friend of the show.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's your best. So now we've upgraded from acquaintance to friend.
That's right.
I was tempering my expectations.
I think your vest won him over, Wes. You look really good today.
Well, I appreciate that, JBT.
You're supposed to pay the compliment back. All right, when we come back, we have plenty left to get to here. News out of college football, Alabama down a key receiver. We're awaiting word on Graham Mertz, who, of course, is dealing with a potential positive test for COVID-19, which would keep him out 21 days if that's confirmed. The day after he went 20-21, right? That's a bummer. We'll find out updates on that and much more as we roll on here on The Edge. Welcome in. It is The Edge here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Just blessed to be here. All right, let's talk a little bit about some news coming out of college football. Wes Reynolds. Now, I haven't seen an update. Have you on one Graham Mertz?
I have not. Well, I've seen a rumor that they think he should be ready to go. That's not confirmed. But
ooh, I love rumors. Let's run with it. It's true.
We are seeing some adjustment, though, in the line. Of course, this was double digits last night. We're now seeing 7.5 at Lincoln to face Nebraska. And initially, I was kind of maybe looking at this spot for Nebraska. I didn't think the final score, what ended up being 52-17, indicated that was a 52-17 game in that Nebraska loss at Ohio State. It played more like a 17-20-point game. Ohio State in full control, but Nebraska did gain 370 yards. They were able to run the ball, but there's still some indecision there at quarterback in terms of, are you going to go with Martinez? Are you going to go with McCaffrey? They were able to make plays in the running game, but Luke McCaffrey, Christian McCaffrey's brother, he looks more like that kind of athlete. I don't know. Could he really, okay, if he's forced to throw the football down the field, can he really make those plays?
Yeah.
And that hasn't been proven to me yet.
I would say watching him too, it wasn't really proven that much either.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the spot would indicate Nebraska here because, look, if Mertz is not able to go, it's going to be Chase Wolf, the number three, because reminder that Jack Cohn hurt his foot in fall practice a couple weeks ago.
It's the only reason why Mertz got the start, right?
Yeah, and Mertz, look, he's the heir apparent in Madison. He's the highest recruit that Wisconsin's ever had at quarterback. They usually don't recruit five-star type quarterbacks, and Mertz had that designation. So 20-21 on Friday, and then test positive. So waiting for the second one, as you mentioned earlier, if there's a second one that comes back positive, that's the 21 days where then he would miss three starts, including the one here at Nebraska. So I'm going to have to wait a little bit more on the injury reports. Nebraska was the spot I wanted because I don't think they were as bad as people thought that they were on Saturday. But now that's going to be priced in the line as Wisconsin is only 7.5 at some faraway places.
So we were waiting for a Wisconsin Badgers press conference today because they were going to meet with the availability. Mm-hmm. Paul Christ apparently did meet with the media today. Let's see, through a Zoom session on Monday, assured Wisconsin's audience Saturday, Nebraska will likely be performed. Feel confident everything's going to happen right now. Feel confident we're going to go forward this weekend. And as a result, in response to the Graham Mertz situation, I will not and cannot and should not comment on anything dealing with our testing and coronavirus. We're following the guidelines set in place by the Big Ten. So we're not going to know.
Right.
Pretty good. Pretty good situation for you here. Do you take the gamble that you trust the rumors Do you lay it? Because I would assume, do you think this number goes back up if he is ruled eligible to play?
Probably ticks up slightly. I don't think it reaches that double digits like it did on the open, but probably could tick back up to 8.5, 9, somewhere around there.
Yep. All right. So again, we're waiting. And again, and to reiterate what Wes said, if Graham Mertz is indeed ruled with a positive test, a second positive test, right, confirming that positive test, 21 days he will have to miss in terms of protocol there in the Big Ten. With that, we move on to the next one, and it's a big injury here. Jalen Waddle expected to miss the remainder of the season with an ankle injury. It's a big loss just because of the level of talent, of course, that Waddle has, and you see it right here. Return specialist as well. Expected to be out for the season after suffering what Coach Nick Saban called the combination of a high ankle sprain and a fracture during the opening kickoff of Saturday's game at Tennessee. But this team is so loaded at the skill positions, like it's almost nuts to say, but how much of an impact is this going to be? Alabama opens a 33-point favorite at home against Mississippi State.
Mississippi State, I don't think it was predicated necessarily on the Waddle injury,
yeah,
but Mississippi State did take a little money this morning. So now it's down to 30.5 at circa 31 in most of the rest of the market. And I figured that that might happen just because this is kind of the dead spot for Alabama. You know, Nick Saban has played former protégés and assistants the last 4 weeks, beaten them all, including Georgia, including Tennessee. And I know it's a lopsided rivalry, but it's that third Saturday in October rivalry that is still officially a rivalry game, even though it hadn't been much of one. So now you get Mississippi State on Halloween, and then they get the bye week, and then they got the big rematch and the big payback spot with LSU. So I wonder if this is that get-through-it game. Mississippi State at least got a bye week, which they really needed, because KJ Costello just one touchdown against 8 interceptions in his last 3 starts. Mike Leach has pulled him and gone with the freshman Rogers at times. So Kylan Hill may not be returning to the program, the Mississippi State running back, but I'd rather be on Mississippi State than Alabama here, because I think this could just kind of could be a get through it spot for the Tide.
All right. When we come back, we get to the World Series. The Dodgers on the verge of taking this one home. Finally getting that title for them for the first time in a long time. But will the Rays back down? They get Blake Snell on the hill for game 6. We'll see if Tampa Bay can stave off elimination coming up tomorrow. That Circa is going to be the first adults-only casino in Las Vegas. So get to see that and everything else Circa has to offer soon. Opening night nearly here. Visa and bringing you inside the big event. We're streaming live from 10 p.m. Eastern Tuesday night through 7 a.m. Eastern Wednesday morning on VSiN.com. So you can experience the grand opening festivities. Join Derek Stevens, Mike Palm, and the VSiN team for every minute of the fun, all free, all night on VSiN.com. Sorry, I got distracted. The Don Issue 2's out now. Got a gummy bear edition. Look pretty sick. I always wanted to be a basketball shoe guy, but I never could be because I can't afford it. All right, let's talk a little bit about the World Series. Wes Reynolds, the Dodgers on the verge of a title, but they have to win one more. They have to win one more, and they get Blake Snell, who had a no-hitter going through 4 until he gave up a 2-run shot last time he faced them. Your level of faith in Blake Snell, because I got to say, the way he has pitched this season, like, I don't have immense confidence that he can string back-to-back performance together. He hasn't been awful. He hasn't been like the consistency of dominance that we have seen from him in the past.
The Rays, if I had to, which I've of course still got a full day and a half to decide what I'm going to do here, but I initially leaned to the Rays in the spot. Dodgers going with Gonsolin here, not going with Urias.
He has not been good either.
Yeah, not going with Urias on the short rest. He just went 3 innings last time. So I was a little bit surprised with that decision by Dave Roberts. Not that I'm ever not surprised with Dave Roberts' decisions, but basically he came out this morning and said everyone except Clayton Kershaw, Julio Urias, and Walker Buehler are available in game 6. Mm. So, you got to think that there's going to be at least a short leash for Tony Gonsolin. But I'm surprised he is getting the call here in this spot.
Well, and it was a short leash for him last time out, too. Only 29 pitches, one in the third. Gave up one hit. It was a solo shot, and that was all she wrote. And in the postseason for Gonsolin, hasn't been great. 9.39 on the ERA. Gave up 5 earned runs in that start against the Braves. His first appearance kind of blew up in his face. Started out really well. Actually, 3 perfect innings before getting toasted after that. And then, of course, the other start ended up winning it, but in 2 innings, gave up 2 earned runs. 3 walks. The walks have been an issue, too. Over 7 2/3 innings of postseason work for Tony Gonsolin. 7 walks up to this point. So, like, that is the one saving grace here for Tampa Bay, is that you're getting Gonsolin here, and hopefully you can open up an early lead and then stave them off with the bullpen that's been a little bit more effective than the Dodgers have.
And the Rays haven't really been consistent hitters either.
Right.
They've very much been living off the home run ball in this series. And look, they had their chances last night. There were tons of chances for them to get runs. And
was it the 7th inning where they had runner two on and only one out, and they ultimately didn't get anything out of it?
Yeah, I think it was bottom of the 7th because we were watching it here during the opening line show.
And what? How do you say it? And they brought up Randy.
Hey, Rosarena.
There you go. They brought him up, and then he couldn't do really anything at all. So
he can hit dingers, but he doesn't always put it in play. And he did the Danny Jones though on Saturday night when he got the winning run. The turf monster got him.
Got sniped. So my initial read is, if it's going to be Gonsolin versus Snell, one maybe a game that goes a little over the total because it sets up to be a little bit more of a higher scoring game between those two. But I don't know if I like the Rays' chances here. I bet him after game one to win the series. I guess it's the matchup you want with Gonsolin getting the start. But as you said, Roberts has shown, at least with Gonsolin, it's going to be quick if you start to show any cracks.
Right, and you wondered, and that's why I wondered why Urias not being available. Obviously, you don't want a heavy load, but he certainly, you would think, could at least go an inning or two or something.
I mean, I would assume that he's not doing it because you want to save him for a potential game 7.
Right. I mean, perhaps that could be his logic. But yeah, I do lean to the Rays here, but I'm kind of with you. I'm not full throated into the Rays at this point because I'm like, you know, it just feels like they're running out of gas here. And that's why I hedged my World Series ticket with Dodgers in 5, Dodgers in 6 and all the different props to at least somewhat get out of it. I'm hopeful for a game 7 just because I want to send that meme out that I've been sending out, the local Stingray in great mood. It was like an actual news headline that they ran on some newscast, and everybody's been using it in support of the Tampa Bay Rays.
I saw a really inappropriate meme about the Tampa Bay Rays. I probably shouldn't share it on the air because some people might get angry, but I will show you. But it involves death, and it's very funny, very solid. All right, so Dodgers minus 135, plus 125 on the other side. Here's the question. Where does the price go? I would think, given the Snell status, I think in terms of just the general public and what they think of him, the fact that Gonsolin hasn't performed very well, going to get Dodgers like minus 125?
I don't know if it'll drop that low. You may get a little bit of a drop, but I think it's kind of going to dance around the current price. The total is curious because finally first 5 went over. I split last night, first 5 and full game over.
Mm-hmm.
And first 5 does go over, and then it just dies at the end because these games have been going over because I thought last night when you go through these lefties, Glasnow has been hit. Kershaw is at least going to give up a couple. And he certainly did that last night, and then the bullpens were able to take care of business. But this has been an over series, in spite of the fact that the Rays, if you look at how they're hitting, the average is not very good, but they've been living off the long ball.
Yeah, and going into last night's matchup, too, I didn't really have a lot of faith that Tampa Bay was going to pull that one off either. Glasnow has not been good, man.
No,
he's
been a big disappointment, and I thought he was very good during the regular season.
He was, yeah.
He has not, because if you look at those ERA xFIP splits we like to use. The xFIP for Tyler Glasnow, I believe, under 3 during the regular season. So if you're under 3, by the way, if you ever look at those numbers on the xFIP, even though if you don't know all the details that make those numbers, that's very good.
Yep.
By the way, and those are usually guys that you want to bet, even when there's a discrepancy between that and the ERA. But, yeah, he has not been good. And, you know, Blake Snell, I guess they're going to call him the Mr. Reliable, because obviously Charlie, my favorite Morton, would be going in game number 7 should that be necessary on Wednesday.
Yeah, Blake Snell too. The walks have been a small issue for him. 24 and a third postseason innings of work, 14 walks. His last two outings, 8 2/3 combined against the Dodgers and the Astros. He's got 8 walks there. We know that walks have been kind of his issue. The good thing for him in his last start, though, is that the strikeouts were back here for Blake Snell. He struck out 9 Dodgers in his last outing when he went 4 2/3. But you never want to give up walks, because if you just happen to put a ball in play, right, that's where the issue comes in, and you might be giving up a little bit more than you are willing to. But Snell has been all right. Only 5 earned runs in his last 3 starts. The problem is you're talking about 5 innings, 4 innings, and then 4 2/3. He's not been going long, and in fact has not pitched 6 innings at all this season. So you can't really rely on him to go.
Well, and then how much gas does that Rays bullpen have?
Right.
It has been highly used here in the postseason, as it usually is under Kevin Cash. But you just wonder if maybe, and that's what's kind of keeping me off, at least at this point, have the Rays finally run into that wall.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to start to do this at the end of every single Monday, since Wes is here with us each and every day at the beginning of the week. Our circled games, right? We're going to have 2 each, 2 games that we're already looking at in the National Football League coming up on Sunday that we have circled. These potential plays are just intriguing betting spots as well. You and I were both kind of locked in step with a couple of these, but I got to tell you, we have seen this number plummet between the Steelers and the Ravens. Kind of figured it would start to move in the Steelers' direction, but it has moved a lot since last night. Couple of minutes. If you missed out on any part of the program today, George Horry, Tim Murray, you can go to VSiN.com/podcast. Check that out. Tim was fantastic, as was George. A lot of great analysis, both college football and the National Football League. All right. Speaking of the NFL, Wes, our circled games, we'll do this every single week at this time. Games we are looking ahead to for the coming weekend. We give you the floor, Wes. Your first circled game this coming weekend. Make it good or else you're fired.
Well, and we have had some line movement on this game, and that was Minnesota and Green Bay. And yeah. I kind of pointed this out last night. I think that this is going to be, it's cliched, the proverbial pros versus Joes type of game. And that's what I think you're seeing. You're seeing some money come in on Minnesota. You're now seeing 6.5 in a lot of spots in the market. Circa, Caesars, DraftKings, a few other spots as well in some faraway places. But I did kind of like Minnesota in this spot. Green Bay off 2 straight road games, 1 loss in Tampa, and then the easy win in against the Texans on Sunday. I don't think this Packers team is as fraudulent as they were last year. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're priced pretty high in the market. And the defense, look, they still have some issues. Not really great against the run. And Minnesota's going to get Dalvin Cook back. And Minnesota's offense, I think, has picked up. I think that Colts game was very deceiving, where they had nothing go right.
Yep.
And now you've got some Green Bay a little banged up in the secondary. Kevin King's got a thigh issue. Darnell Savage with the quad issue. So, look, I Minnesota off that bye week, I think that was probably beneficial for them, because they get a little bit healthy. They haven't really been totally healthy all season, and we know that they've had to rebuild this defense essentially under Mike Zimmer and company. But if you're still getting 7, that would be the side I would be on here. I just think that maybe Green Bay, the market has finally caught up with Green Bay, because I think they were so lukewarm on them last year, even though they were 13-3. It's like, boy, they really don't look like a 13-3 team when you really watch them play. But Green Bay also has a short week after that. They go play the 49ers. And we know the last time they went out there last year, they got absolutely boat raced on Sunday Night Football.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they're going to necessarily look past a divisional opponent, but I like the Vikings here in the touchdown.
Yeah, and Minnesota, it's nuts how much these DVOA metrics move. Going into week 6, or after week 5, I should say, through week 5, the Minnesota Vikings were the eighth overall offense in the National Football League. Through week six, though, now all the way down to 20th, still a top 10 rushing offense, taking out the 30th ranked defense in terms of efficiency. But you mentioned it, 28.8, that is the points per game for Minnesota if you take out the Colts game, right? It's their one lone blemish from an offensive standpoint. That Falcons game, you take, you know, you go to the second half, 9 yards per play, 45 yards per drive. Like, it's an offense that's got some explosion if Kirk Cousins can stay out of it.
And I don't think you want to, even though Green Bay easily handled them 43 to 34 and the game was probably a little more widespread, that was the first game for everybody, and some teams are going to be bad in the first game and some teams are going to be good. So I don't think you want to put too much stock into that result, and that's why I do like Minnesota in
the
spot.
Yeah, the circle game for me, I'm really intrigued by New England on the road against Buffalo. This is up to four now in multiple shops. The Buffalo Bills have fallen off here a little bit over the last few weeks, right? Weeks one through four, we're talking about 4-0 straight up, 3-1 against the spread, 30.75 points per game, 6.3 yards per play, essentially 6.4 because that was 6.37, and a plus 23 point differential. But that's what kind of sticks out to you, though, right, is – the first four games, despite the fact you were undefeated, we talked all about this offense, you only had a point differential of plus 23.
Right.
Then you're talking about back-to-back blowout losses, barely getting by the Jets, and now all of a sudden, you're a 5-2 team that has a negative 4-point differential. You've failed to cover your last three games, been held to 17 points per game, 5.23 yards per play, 34.4 in terms of yards per drive. And now, as much as the New England Patriots have struggled, Wes, they still have a pretty good secondary. Bill Belichick is still Bill Belichick, and I'm just fascinated by this matchup of him getting Josh Allen, who has looked more and more like the Josh Allen we've known for the last few seasons. Against the Jets, it's the one thing I'll disagree with George, who was with us earlier. I thought Josh Allen was awful yesterday. Mm-hmm. He had two passes that should have been picked off that were dropped by Jets DBs. They did not look good whatsoever offensively. Again, into enemy territory, 9 consecutive drives, you don't punt, and yet you're 1-for-9 on third down in Jets territory. You only managed 6 field goals. It was not a good offensive performance for a team that has been showing its issues. And the one time you faced a top 10 defense, that was the Kansas City Chiefs, 4.1 yards per play. You only managed 17 points. I think we're starting to see what the Bills are here. I just wonder where this market goes, considering how bad the Patriots have looked over the last few weeks.
Right, because you and I both bought low on the Patriots, and those tickets were immediately tore up from the floor up from the get-go on New England, as they did not look good at all. They got to get a running game going, because we've seen with the Bills, you can run on this team. Kansas City, that's pretty much what they did on that Monday night game, the first game of that doubleheader last week, is just run the ball on these guys. And this is where yards can kind of be deceiving when you're looking at this. Yeah, the Bills had 422 yards, only got 18 points, and it was on 72 plays because the Jets' offense obviously struggling and can't sustain drives. Bills also were very sloppy, 11 penalties for 106 yards. So they haven't looked like that team that everybody thought it was going to be. And this is that interesting. I always use this term to show them who's boss. Look, the Patriots have been the boss in this division forever. Is this the show them who's boss, or that where the show them who's boss is actually the underdog and not the favorite, or is this a changing of the guard game? And that's what makes it interesting to me. But I think I'm leaning your side here in terms of Patriots plus 4, because this is the absolute dirt worst buy low spot. And that's a team sometimes I like to take when a team's off two home losses.
Yeah.
And you know, the best thing when you lose a couple at home is to go on the road. And maybe that's going to refocus a team. And I do believe that Bill Belichick can scheme something up to at least keep this game competitive. But they got to get something, especially out of that running game.
Your second circled game, sir.
My second circled game is the 49ers and the Seahawks. And that's why I asked George how they are grading home field advantage, because I know you obviously have to deduct from every single team because of COVID-19 and no spectators being able to be in the stands. Seattle, I think, usually is at least minimum top 3 home field advantage in the NFL, and I usually rate them number 1. New Orleans, of course, is up there with them. I think Denver, usually because of the altitude factor, and then you get some of the cold weather cities like Green Bay, New England, and Buffalo and the like in December. But now it's at minus 3, and if you say, because everybody, and it's probably inaccurate, but everybody says default home field advantage 3, well, we know some teams are higher, and some teams are usually lower. Like Miami doesn't have a great home field advantage, nor does Jacksonville, so they'd be 1.5 or 2, whereas Seattle in a normal season would be like 4 or 4.5 for a home field advantage. But now this is minus 3, so it's like, do you think these two teams are very equal on a neutral site? And I'm still not, and look, I'm always the Seattle cynic, and I usually pay for it with a bunch of losing tickets going against these guys over the years. But I still think they're the better team than the 49ers. I would still have them above that, and I'm concerned about the 49ers' injuries, and it's like now all of a sudden the market perceives them as being back. Look, Seattle, Russell Wilson doesn't usually turn the football over, but he did last night. And he had three interceptions. But if you look at what Seattle did, and George Zahori is right, as that the Seattle defense is bad, but the offense had 572 yards last night on an Arizona defense that we were saying, too, was overrated because look at who they played. They played the Washington football team and the Jets, two of the worst offenses in the National Football League. So you saw against a real offense that that Arizona defense is very shaky, even though they got the win. So I'm going to look at this a little bit more. I'm not convinced yet I'm going to be on Seattle. That's the side I'm leaning in, even though that's always a tricky spot off that first loss.
All right, last one for me. And the ship has sailed in terms of playing this, at least from the Steelers' perspective. We talked about this yesterday on the opening lines that this opened up six, and you're like, hey, you know, this is probably going to move off of that number of six. We're talking about the Steelers and the Ravens, of course, and the Steelers now catching Wes Reynolds. Looking at what? Four right now, 3.5.
A lot of 3.5s out there.
3.5, including Circa. There's a couple of prominent offshore books that are sitting just at 3-120. So you wonder how far this is going to go. You kind of alluded to this. I've been playing the Steelers quite a bit in this little run that they're on, right? They're 6-0 straight up, 5-1 against the spread. Might be buy low time here on the Baltimore Ravens.
I completely agree with you, and that's where I would like to go. And then I don't know if it's going to quite get down to three. You probably would have to try to see if you can buy down if you want that number, and you're going to pay heavier juice in the NFL, of course, doing that. But one of the things I saw with the Steelers that did give me concern, even though they had a big lead and almost blew it, Ben Roethlisberger had really been taking care of the football. Mm-hmm. Pretty much most of the year, and that's why I thought, okay, if you're looking at an under-the-radar MVP and don't want to bet the chalk, Wilson and Aaron Rodgers and the like, he would be the guy to look at because he's been so efficient. And look, his team is winning. They're 6-0. But three interceptions last game against Tennessee, and I was very surprised to see the Steelers not be as balanced on offense. They only ran the ball 25 times for 3.8 per carry, and they let Ben throw it 49 times. Is Ben still that type of quarterback where he can throw it 49 times? Mm-hmm. I mean, or is he more a guy, hey, let's keep him around 25 to like low 30 attempts and be able to be a more balanced offense? So that did give me some concerns. And another thing, too, about Baltimore, perception on these primetime games really factors in weeks down the line because everybody remembers the Ravens getting their doors kicked in by the Kansas City Chiefs on Monday Night Football. So the perception on them is a little bit lower now. So this is where I think you can absolutely buy low on the Ravens.
Yeah, the worry for me, of course, is that the Ravens now right now is currently 18th in terms of offensive efficiency in the National Football League, taking on the second-best defense in the NFL. But that's mainly weighed down by their passing attack. They still have a top-five rush offense if you look at efficiency metrics. So I would still be leaning here towards a buy-low spot for the Baltimore Ravens in this matchup on Sunday. All right. By the way, how's this not in primetime game? You got to suffer through the NFC East?
It's flex time in week 8.
Let's go. Let's go. All right, that's Wes Reynolds. Follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel, at me, JVT. Betting Across America coming at you next. Remember, if you missed out on any part of this show or any of your other favorite VSiN shows, VSiN.com/podcast is free. You can get them all at VSiN Best Bets right on your phone. We'll see you tomorrow.